Gates Air, Nick Van Hester. In his current role, Nick has been broadcasting big and small fine transmission STL solutions that are reliable, easy to operate, and efficient. How many of you out there have T1s and you want to get rid of them? Gates Air has the perfect product to help you out with that situation. With a proven track record of experience of more than 20 years, Nix has played a critical role for project management and in the broadcast architecture of some of the largest radio and TV implementations, both domestic and international. In speaking with Nick, to quote, "Over 20 years in the broadcast industry, and I am still trying to figure it all out, just like the rest of us." Ladies and gentlemen, Nick.
I know I'm the roadblock between this presentation and lunch. So I figured, you know what? Okay, I got that time slot. I'm gonna make it 5 slides or less. How about that? Maybe. And well, this is different. My presentation's a PDF, so we'll see how it goes. But I don't know about you guys. I was talking to Patrick last night, and I'm still trying to figure it out. These engineers are coming up with new stuff. The Ross presentation, I heard high density. IP, put it in the cloud, software as a service, what else am I missing? All these things. Actually, I was talking to one of the engineers in our team last week, and we were talking about Exciter software for TV and radio stuff, and he goes, well, actually, we're already working on the next one. I'm like, what? ATSC3, repack, that was 3-4 years ago. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is leveraging SRT. So, quick survey, who has heard of SRT? Hands up. Okay. All right. Who's heard of FEC for audio? Okay. Who's working with, let's say, 10 to 15 radio stations or managing that many? Okay, a couple hands. I know a few of you guys. All right, multiple sites. How about multiple sites? Okay. And then the one that I always get all the hands up for, we'll see if we're right on this one. Who has to work with bad or shady internet connections? Okay, good. So then that's what we're going to talk about here for the next few minutes, okay? And my presentation is roughly 10, 15 minutes, and then we'll go to lunch. Does that sound good? All right. So as Patrick said, I've been working with Gates here for the last, since 2015. Before that, I worked at Fox Networks doing all of the video transmission for the 13 networks. And that meant that I had a lot of on-prem and off-prem processing. I worked with a bunch of video distribution guys as well. So this SRT stuff is kind of near and dear to my heart. It makes a lot of sense. And I think it's kind of a layer of protocol that works on things that we already have. It just makes it easier to distribute things. So we will talk about some of that a little bit further. What is SRT? We're going to answer that question right out of the gate. How does SRT work exactly? What are the inner workings? Do we need anything extra as a separate layer? Do we need additional licensing? We'll answer that question too. What about the differences between FEC and SRT? Because I saw a lot of hands, people are using FEC, that's great. How do we improve on that with SRT? And then we'll talk about SRT for mixed media and some of the benefits. So first and foremost, SRT, what does it stand for? The first part, secure. Meaning that encrypts content in accordance with AES 128 and 256. So that's the first thing. Want to make sure that everything's secure. Second, it's reliable. That means that it recovers from severe packet loss when you have those weak internet connections or the on-again, off-again type of relationship of a connection. And then lastly, transport. It dynamically adapts to the changing network conditions. So we'll dig a little bit deeper, but this presentation overall is pretty high-level stuff. You're not going to see a lot of eye charts, maybe just 4. That's it. But we'll do all those at once. So SRT is designed for high-quality, secure, low-latency transport of audio video over the public internet. And we do that via modified UDP-based data transfer protocol. So it's pretty simple. SRT is scalable, it's firewall-friendly, and most importantly, all the hands go up, it's open source. So, who's using SRT? We're not the only ones in the pool. There's 500 members of SRT. The Ross guys are on that. There's a laundry list of other companies. Gates Air was actually the first, though, to introduce SRT for audio. So that's kind of a big thing, because I think the majority of folks are radio guys, and so audio is a big thing. But it also works nicely with all of the other manufacturers, vendors, whatever you want to call them, and it's been used for quite some time. So how does it work? Well, we have the UDP and TCP. They're both core components of that protocol suite. It's actually residing on or riding on top of that layer. So it sits on top of UDP, meaning that you can have TCP, UDP, and then it's right on there. So you've got unicast, multicast, and broadcast, and it'll work for all three of those. Our VP of Engineering, Kayer, said it nicely. He said, you know, COVID-19 is teaching us the extent of things we can do with broadband connectivity and accelerating plans of moving to the cloud. That being said, I know a lot of you guys have been working from home. How many of us have worked from home in the last 365 days, right? So that's really the goal here, is how do we do a lot of this stuff? Maybe we're gonna be pushing some stuff to the cloud. I saw in the Ross presentation before, high density in the cloud processing, stuff like that. How do we now distribute our audio once it's processed using this type of technology? And I do wish I could scroll just a little bit, but I think we'll get the majority here. So let's look at how SRT works. First of all, like I mentioned, it's a UDP protocol. It uses something called automatic repeat request, otherwise known as ARC. And so this is my first eye chart. As you see it, you'll see the encoder and decoder. In our case, it's called Ascent Media Gateway. And what that is doing is if the receiver is recognizing that gap in the stream, it finds those packets and goes back and re-requests them again. And the genius of this is that the send and receive remain in conversation throughout the transmission of the packets. So that makes sure that they're all going to reach the finish line using SRT and FEC. You're only getting the missing packets that get retransmitted. So by doing this, as you can see with those three packets that are shown, they're going back, they're getting re-requested. It doesn't cause a mess of overhead or extensive latency, but it's really combining it and giving that complete package at the end of that IP delivery. So it's pretty cool stuff. Let's look at the differences, though, between FEC and SRT. We'll just kind of bounce back and forth here. First of all, FEC is used by a whole bunch of different manufacturers, and there's a good reason for it. It adds that redundant AV stream prior to the transmission, so you can go and figure out, what's the sweet spot for my FEC, right? SRT, as we learned just previous to this, it's actually retransmitting those packets for those streams. FEC is great over semi-managed networks where there can be some minor data loss, right? SRT, though, it says, well, if that packet's missing, I'm going to avoid that massive overhead that I need and that massive bandwidth and figure it out a different way. FEC is usually effective when packet loss is less than 3-5%. After that, you might be having to figure some other stuff out. But what's great about SRT is that it scales in relation to the packet loss experience. So as it's doing that retrans, it's figuring it out for you. And it doesn't have a fixed breakable level like forward error correction does. That's pretty important. So SRT, it really is, it's a good fit for the unpredictable public internet connection. If a packet loss is minimal, so is the overhead. And on the average, SRT uses less bandwidth. Interesting case study. I had a client in Colorado. They were using some other devices. I said, hey, you got to hear about this new and greatest, latest and greatest SRT thing and high density audio distribution and all this. And I went through the presentation. He goes, that's great, but I don't need it. It was like stone cold. Stop. A year goes by. They're starting to get off of C-band stuff and using the public internet a little bit more. He calls me up. Hey, that thing that you showed me last year, I want to buy one. Okay, what changed? Well, the C-band stuff is more expensive, they raise the rates, whatever. We want to start using the public internet and we want to start using it this way in a high density fashion. So it was pretty cool to see how things are changing and how this works. So what we're looking at here is a SRT for video and audio. So it's kind of a mixed environment. On the source side, we've got ATSC 1, ATSC 3, a couple forward error correction signals going through the WAN and then ending up on the other side. So that's one scenario. Another one is using WAN 2, which could be, we talked about on-prem, off-prem type of infrastructures. So it could be something like that, where you're sending one stream to the transmitter site, one to an off-prem site or a backup site or a streaming service site, and then to multiple stations at the same time as well. So when we do that, that single ATSC3 program, it might contain multiple streams with FEC, or maybe those streams are ingested at the studio by something like an ascent, tunneled, or using a dual SRT in that case. So the receiver, it recovers those packets, decapsulates the video and the FEC payload, and it sends to one or many exciters. What we're seeing here is the source stream going to an ascent, going to mixed media. So at this time, I'm going to jump back and forth. We can say, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different destinations. So maybe the media server is distributing that audio or video to multiple locations. And I heard a lot of questions about bandwidth and capacity and stuff in the previous presentation. So, you know, in this environment, up to 200 destinations, maximum of 300 megabits per server. For audio, that breaks down to like 200 destinations. So we've seen that as a pretty good capacity, high capacity, seems to meet the needs. Or for ATSC3, up to 50 megabits per video source, so, you know, 6 locations. And of course, you can stack these devices up as needed. We'll look at 4 different topography scenarios that I've had input, you know, from stations across the country asking about with a high density infrastructure. The first one is mainly focused at ATSC3, so that's, you know, studio, one big stick, maybe one other somewhere else. So in that scenario, you've got your STLs, you're gonna put that high density device on either side of that STL and your encoder. Or maybe scenario 2, ATSC using single frequency network. You know, that's an eye chart in itself. There's a lot of equipment needed to pull that off. I like scenario number 3 though, and I'll show you the other half of it here. IP managed networks, and I think that's really where everyone's going, is because it becomes a lot simpler at that point. You have your head end site, your STL, your IP managed high density network, and it just goes out to everything at once, or it gets distributed as needed. And then there's the fourth one, the off-air reception and retransmit. And since I work in a lot of states that have mountains, there's terrain shielding and all that sort of stuff. So what we're looking for, you know, is you put the ascent or a high density product at the head end side, send it out to your big stick, which then rebroadcasts or provides off-air pickup. And we're waiting for those ATSC3 cards to come out here pretty soon. So it works really for all different scenarios. So in conclusion then, let's look at the benefits of SRT. Works with AES3, AES67, you know, the list goes on, analog MPX, other protocols, Wheatnet, Livewire, Dante, 1 and 3.0. But what's cool about it is it'll work for point-to-point, point-to-multipoint, and then those 3 different type of stream styles, multicast, unicast, or multi-unicast. Well, how do we take it a little bit further? Well, let's say we have all of these stations out there with transmitters, and they want to leverage that SRT technology. That's pretty easy. Now shipping, we have a card that will go right into the exciter. So that means that you get all of this feature set, plus all the SNMP monitoring and control, and you can put that card right into one of our exciters, and it is now exciter-enabled SRT with dynamic stream splicing that will work very easily over the public internet. So, you know, obviously we're not the only fish in the pool. What do we do if you don't have one of our exciters? Well, then we have a rack-mounted half RU. I haven't heard anyone say it yet. It looks just like... No, okay, good. It looks just like some of the other half RU products out there, but it's a little bit different. So we had a couple use cases where it's like, well, we want to use it at all these football games. We want to use it at stadiums. We want to use it at, we don't want to rely on these, you know, outdated new MPLS circuits. T1s are gone. So as you can see, this is just a half RU device that uses the SRT, the dynamic stream slicing. You can put it on a cradle point or the public internet, whatever you have at the site, and then use this device to use as your audio codec. So come see me if you have more questions on that. But otherwise, that's it, guys. I think we did it right in time for lunch here. Stay in touch with us on LinkedIn, where we have product releases, installations, training, new product announcements. And if there's anything else, just stop by or give me a question now. Does now work for questions? Yeah? Yeah, go for it.
Real quick, with the shipping shortages right now coming from overseas, is there a significant delay, or do you guys have all your chips, or what's going on?
Does anybody have all their chips? That's No, shipping is an issue. March did a bulk buy on some of the chips that we needed. So these are being manufactured. They are in stock. We can sell them. But the shipping thing is not just the chip shortage, it's also the logistics shortage. I'll be totally transparent with you guys. We have containers of stuff that we just can't get drivers to bring to our factory. So, everyone has to be creative about it. And so we're working on air freight and stuff like that to get the chips.
Hey, Nick, we got a text question submitted. Is SRT a GatesAir proprietary protocol?
No, it is not. No, that is an open source protocol, as we talked about at the beginning of the presentation. Other manufacturers, 500 other manufacturers are using SRT, to be exact. Over 500, I'm sure.
How would the latency, comparing SRT to FEC, what would the difference, typical differences in latency be?
That's a great question. It depends on the ISP provider. It would take some fine tuning and testing, dependent on your exact connection. I will say that one of the TV groups that I work with, they had another product, and they are gonna be demoing ours to see if it is making an improvement, but it really depends on what your throughput is and your payload, and then testing it with that one to kind of tweak things to see how it works. How about better than 5% though? Because FEC kind of drops off after that. Any other questions? Well, if that's it, thank you guys. Thank you for letting me present to you.
Thank you very much, Nick. We're a little bit early for lunch, but we're efforting to get that put out soon. But for the last two face-to-face clinics, you've seen the captioning devices set up here. So what we're going to do is have Bill Bennett from ENCO talk a little bit about the technology and field some of the questions. Some of our past surveys have suggested that this is a pretty cool thing to have at the clinic. So, Bill, you want to talk a little bit?
Hi. Thanks. I guess I'll stand up there. Can I do it from the back hallway? Hi, everybody. So I didn't really have anything planned here, but I appreciate it, Bill and Ken and the guys asking for me to kind of babble a little about this. I'm with ENCO Systems, who, we've been around since, late 80s, early 90s in the broadcast space. And around 2006, we created this thing that we call InCaption, and it was mostly geared to television broadcasters. Back then it was using some pretty poor rudimentary technologies compared to today. Now it's using advanced AI and deep neural network learning to really improve the accuracy. Now I'm paranoid because I'm watching to see if it captions me correctly when I say that. Speak slowly. There's a real reality of, there's two things. In television broadcasting, the FCC requires over-the-air content to be captioned. But there are not enough human stenographers out there to caption. And so we created this to try to address that with a device that, like with anything software-based, the more you use it, the cheaper it gets. It gets much more economical than humans, especially if you're a 24/7 operation. And because it has the AI, I'm bouncing around here, I know. In fact, I've got these slides. I should probably use these because they keep me focused. ADHD, it's a gift, they say. Middle button? or not? It, doop, doop. Okay, actually, all we do is make graphic slides. That's. But anyway, so the product, it's kind of cool working with an AI piece of technology. And actually, I have a presentation at 3:15. We're talking more, just touching on it a little bit. But what this AI is doing is it's listening to the speaker's words, right? It's listening to my words. It's using raw speech to text. You know, this word sounds like this, like the word to, though, or the word there. There's three ways to say either one of those, at least. How does it know the right one? It's also using statistical analysis, analyzing the grammar of my sentence structure, my word usage. It's actually delaying a couple of words before and after any of these questionable words that it doesn't know yet, because it's trying to see what other words are coming after it to help narrow down how to spell that word to, or how to spell that word there. Let's see. Ooh, okay, interesting. Well, I'm not going to tell you which spelling I had in my head, so that's perfect. And what's kind of neat is it uses a...
Well, you can't, but maybe I can.
Ooh, ah, mind reading.
So it picks up everything, and there's a list of words that it cannot present.
Yes, so, right, I get your point. There is a, I'm going to bump through these real quick here, because I can talk about the platform and how it interfaces with video signals and audio, and it's Windows-based, and by the way, fully on-premises, no internet connectivity, which gives it a heck of a lot more resiliency. There's a bunch of little squirrels in the one you back box in a rack, and they just keep running in these little spinning wheels. Nah, not really. I'm just trying to get to a diagram there. So
while you're getting to that, Bill, I've never really watched myself talk before.
It's mesmerizing. And it should, depending on the sensitivity level, there you go, a double chevrons. The AI heard my voice, and he knows it's not he or she, or it, I don't know. It knows I'm not Bill. It's a different voice. And so it's going to inject those chevrons when the next person speaks.
So if I say something like, no shit, really?
Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you very much. It worked. Oh, time to breathe again. We have a list of 1,400 words that it won't let through. One of them is shit, right? So about 3 months ago, I was literally at the Defense Intelligence Agency headquarters in Washington, D.C. They have a couple of these, and I was giving them training, and no internet connection in that building at all, pretty much. And they told me to remove almost all of these filters because they said when these generals have these meetings, there's all kinds of words they're using. And for accuracy, they don't want to trap or omit those. You know, they could be, you know, subject matter, domain to the subject matter. There we go. And we have other customers, QVC and HSN are using these 24/7 now live, and they talk about breast cancer awareness. Well, that's a word that we're blocking normally, just to be safe. But, you know, or tush. There was a woman talking about a garment and her and how it fits on her backside, and that they used the word tush. So you can take out these words, you know, that you might want to block. But yeah, when you look at that list, if anyone really is curious, I can show you. It's 1,400 words of. I mean, you got to Google some of these words to see what they mean. Bill, do you want to try anything else? Any other words?
Oh, well, I haven't pushed the envelope that far, but so we've gone pretty far beyond those traditional seven words you can't say on television, popularized by George Carlin.
Man, he just started it, though. He did it really well. Yeah, but I mean, of course, the whole thing is FCC requires off over-the-air captioning. You can't have these words. Most of them, but if you're doing over-the-top streaming, you want to caption that. There's concerns. There have been many a lawsuit filed because of content that's not accessible to those who are hard of hearing. So that's why a lot of folks like to caption anything that's streaming too. Anything that's been off on the air or will be on the air, even if it's streaming at the moment, needs to be captioned. What's really neat is radio. We have customers now looking at and caption and using it for radio. This is kind of a weird thing. In radio, you never think about it. Because it's just there was no fix for it, is that if someone is deaf or hard of hearing, they can't enjoy the interview that's going on. I mean, maybe there's a transcript of it later, but how do they enjoy it live? So there is someone now who, a station in D.C. using this live to caption 24/7 to their website. Oh, my car has been towed. Okay, I'll be back. Just kidding. What's 2-2? So, okay, there's like four ways to use the word two. So, but yeah, no, there's somebody just wrote down all other examples of how, you know, different words have different spellings. And yeah, it's interesting. The human language, there's over a million words in its dictionary, but you know, and then you have other things like Indian, Native American terms, Monongahela, Algonquin, Allegheny, those words aren't in the English language, yet they are very much parts of people's towns and cities. Elegant those. Okay, so that's let's see, Allegheny. Allegheny? Allegheny River. I live in Pittsburgh, so I can, you know, it comes to mind. So it doesn't have that word in its dictionary. So if I'm in a local news broadcaster in Pittsburgh, I'm going to want to add that to its custom library. And that's pretty cool that you can do. Of course, in Wisconsin, any interesting, unique spellings of words in Wisconsin? There's a ton, right? I mean, again, lots of Native American terms. And
how about Oconomowoc?
You tell me. Is that it?
Woo! Or as pronounced by the national anchor, Oconomowoc.
It fixed it. So it's scary. Sometimes the thing's smarter than we are. Let's see. Oh, and one other neat thing about when you do use, if you do use automated speech to text or even humans to transcribe stuff, that you get these text files, these sidecar files, they're called, you know, they're just transcripts. And the video folks in television, they love these because different video editing platforms, Final Cut Pro, DaVinci Resolve, Premiere Pro, have their own different kind of formats. And you can just take a video file or a recording of some sort of a broadcast or a video and line back up these sidecar files, and then you've instantly created captions that you can embed in the video. That one's hexadecimal. I have no idea how to read that one. If you guys can read that, that's, I owe you a cup of coffee. And of course, like anything, is a product, it's webified, right? You know, we have a full API, automation can hook to it, scheduling, it can grab teleprompter, scripts before the news hour starts so that it looks for any unique words that it doesn't have, and it, you know, it's can be told to store those for a while before the newscast. And in fact, that's what we're doing here. All that you're, if you look at the rig over here at this round table, it's a very small setup. The system's just running on a small gigabyte alpha, a Brix Pro, which is kind of like an Intel Nook. And then I'm using a Raspberry Pi to render a full screen HTML Chrome window to the HDMI output. So, I mean, it's amazingly, amazing what you can do with software anymore. So,
I'm impressed by the relatively low latency on this. It seems to be keeping up quite well.
Yeah, it can get hung up when it's really struggling with a couple of words it may not know that are together, because it will really try to wait as long as it can before sending them out. But there's a slider you can adjust. About 4 seconds is the maximum wait time, roughly. But even when you watch live television, sometimes a human can't type nearly as fast as people are talking back and forth. They, in their talented skill set they have, which is awfully hard to do, you know, being a stenographer, like a court reporter too, they can summarize a sentence really quickly and then send out the summary of it going out. However, I know that hard of hearing folks don't like that as much because they want to make their own preference as to what that sentence is supposed to mean. So there's kind of a couple angles to look at that.
I have found myself looking at this a few times this morning when I could not quite make out what the presenter was telling me. Yes, exactly. It was a whisper, but it picked it up very well. So who else has been looking at that screen this morning and seeing the captions and finding it useful or interesting?
Awesome.
Or in some cases, entertaining? No shit, really?
What's funny is you can also replace these bad words with just some other word.
Yeah, it came up again.
So the word shit could actually equal the word bleep or something, you know. So you would say, you say no shit, it says no bleep. It's funny. Don't, you know, if you're in Detroit, don't ever replace the word GM with the word Ford. You know, that would really, that would really tick off some underwriters.
So this has been very useful at our conference. This is the second year we've been able to do this. Are you seeing this used at other conferences and events?
Oh, yeah. So actually, I mean, you mean like 20 months ago? Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, right. We NAB did ask us to caption files, pre-recorded events for them that we did do for Amplify a few months ago. And we are, this is at the NAB main stage in Vegas back in 2019. And we are going to be captioning again the NAB main stage in Vegas in October. So I'll be out there with that kit doing that. So, you know, it's funny because we obviously we like to do it because it's a bit of a marketing thing to show that we exist. And, you know, that booth name and website address or booth number and website address is there for a reason. But I personally care about this because, you know, we're all getting older. We're all getting hearing issues. We all know some people who are deaf or hard of hearing. I use captions at home, especially if it's stuff that's got some British comments or, commentary or, you know, a voice. It helps to make content more accessible. And again, I'm talking about radio stations using it. There's a whole lot of people out there who can't enjoy what's on radio because they can't hear it. So, yeah, it's a product, but also it helps people with a problem, solves a problem. So,
good. Any questions out there?
Anyone want to try swearing at it?
What if you have multiple speakers, like two people talking at have back and forth may talk over each other?
Yes, definitely great question, and it's a train wreck. Like imagine a politics kind of show. People are, you know, arguing left and right. It doesn't know what voice to track because it's just trying to grab whatever word that it hears.
So we can try that right now. If you just talk over
talk
me, and
top
we can
of
see what happens
like
here as we ramble
nice
on.
Nice to have lunch with you, by the way. Dinner was fantastic. I can't wait to go on that boat.
Oh, you don't know what
you're
talking
week.
About. Come on.
It's like we're having a duet here. So there you go. Technology versus humans. A human can't do it either. They can't caption to, you know, what we just said. A human could not caption that because, I mean, he just couldn't. So that's a challenge.
Yeah, shockingly, we did not rehearse this.
we're best, extemporaneously, clearly. That's our shtick, so. Oh, wait, does it do shtick? Shtick. Yeah, cool.
On the subject of multiple dueling speakers, is it possible to set up two or more of these systems running in parallel to display on the same screen or the same display at the same time?
Absolutely.
Assign one to the moderator, assign one to the guest, or assign another one to another guest?
Quite literally, you could do that. And the captioning, especially with CEA 708 digital television captioning, there's a lot of different subtitle channels of captions you could put out there. And then tell your, I don't know if you can display all at the same time. That would get quite messy on a screen. But yes, you could run multiple instances, multiple platforms, taking each stream. We do have a thing that we call mic check that you could take different audio sources coming in. This assumes that one person, or maybe something called podium, is whatever is said from that mic source is always going to get a label ahead of its caption. So, if you have three people here, George, Chris, and Bob, if they only talk one person at a time, the system will hear it and put out before their caption, George, Chris, or Bob, before their caption. But again, if they talk together, then it's a bit of a mess, so.
And one follow-up. I'm very curious to see how it does on this famous internet doggerel. I have a spelling checker. It came with my PC. It plainly marks for my review mistakes I cannot see. Better than the original.
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay, so Kirk, what was that? Super Cadja Fragilistic Expialidocious?
Yeah.
Compromise.
you
briefly mentioned a topic about teleprompter scripts. Does that really mean MOS-connected newsroom system production devices?
Yeah, we can integrate with several different newsroom automation systems, yep.
Okay.
Including ENPS, MOS listener. We have a MOS listener. It goes out and grabs the rundown for like the 6 p.m., scans it. It doesn't caption live from that, not at all. It definitely captions from the people speaking.
Waits the dictionary? Is that pretty much what it does?
So even simpler, with its million words in the dictionary, chances are it knows virtually all the words in that newscast. But I see about typically, this is not a by far a scientific analysis, but I see maybe 10 words every half hour that it keeps. Those are names of people, maybe technical jargon or an acronym or something in a teleprompter that's not an English word. So it holds that into memory for about a half an hour or an hour. You could leave it in persistently. It just depends on how long you tell it to. So when it gets these words it doesn't quite know, it'll look to that list for help, basically, to see if it looks like one of those words and then send out its best guess. Okay.
Is the, and you said third-party closed captioning encoder devices, Evert, CEG, Link, those are common ones, or are there more?
Yeah, we can natively, through either RS-232 or Telnet over IP, control all of those brands. We also have, as we assemble this device per order in our shop, we have an optional SDI encoder card that we can plug into it. So it's just HD-SDI in and HD-SDI out with the embedded captions.
And is the software sold as a lease program, or is it an on-prem purchase option?
Yeah, pretty much it's a lease, and it mirrors. When we created the concept, the concept was to make it a simple transition to what is already an OPEX using human captioners. We're not trying to cause humans to lose their jobs. There's just not enough of them anyway. Literally, if you Google it, there's a huge shortage in people that can caption. I'm digressing now. So it was easiest for customers to just replace that hourly rate with an hourly lease. Exactly. Yep. Oh.
Hey, Bill, I was wondering, can this be set up to, would it need to have a different vocabulary set for different segments of a newscast? If a weather person was talking about something happening in a county in Tennessee, for example, that is pronounced Murray and clearly spelled Maori. Or maybe the sports guy is talking about people's last names that are complicated sometimes.
Yep.
Are there any segmenting or day parting of the vocabulary?
Great question, because yes, we can hold up to 1,000 words in these custom libraries at any one time, which is quite a lot, because we have customers that do captions for sporting events. They just bring in the names of all the athletes. You know, that's not more than 50 names or something like that. And most of those are regular words anyway. But also, if you're, depending on, so all of these word libraries can be pulled in and out based on a scheduler or a GPI or remote automation, several ways to do that. So, yeah.
Equanimeous St. Brown. Kabir Baja Biamila. Coded orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. Oh, I can go on. Bill Bennett, ENCO, thank you very much for this. We have to wrap this up. And
thanks.
We're running out of time.
One more.
Sorry, catch him after. We appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity, guys.